George, no mates, as opposed to Billy, no mates. But I'm joined by Sue Howe and also by Shireen Carroll. And Sue has been in before.
I have indeed.
Telling us all about Bockwell.
Well, so yeah.
But that's all gone now.
All
you're into other
now.
Stuff. We'll talk about that later. And Shireen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Is this your first time on the radio, Shireen?
Yes, it is.
Great stuff. Great to have you in. And this morning we're talking about a fundraising event for children with autism. Sue, how did you get involved?
Well, okay. So I teach, as you know, I was on with yourself in 2015 when I was launching my other dance fitness. So I'm doing a new dance fitness now since May last year, and it's absolutely taken over Raheny. There's people that travel from Artane, Malahide, Sutton, Dunnecarney, all around, because it's a brand new dance fitness class. So it's the new craze, really. So
and it's called Conga.
It's called Conga.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a name.
So it was created by a girl called Tara in Australia, and it's called the Jungle Body. Okay. So one of the programs.
You could be talking about me too.
So one of the programs that I teach is called Conga. So with Conga, there's all different areas that you can target with your body. We have boxing, we have squats, we have toning tracks, we have hip hop, dance, pop, so much involved, and it's for all different ages, shapes and sizes. And I mean, we have an absolute blast at class. It's people to come for 1 hour and just have a great time, you know, while getting fit.
So when people arrive at Conga class, what exactly do they get?
Well, it's kind of like a fun night out. You know, it's a high cardio, high intense class. With each song that comes on, there's no class that's ever going to be the same. So we'll have a boxing track, say, then we'll have a pop track, and we'll have a squat track, and we'll just keep going for the hour. We have floor tracks as well to try and tone the tummy area and the bum and the hips and all that jazz.
I'm just looking at this. This is the first time in my life that I've actually wobbled, and I feel more like Homer Simpson. I know, I promise, Bockwell.
You'll have to give
I'm going to have to give this a go. For people my age, 51, would it be okay for me to tug along?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. I have a 67-year-old in class.
Well, that makes me feel a heck of a lot better, I can tell you.
She can put us to shame. Like, if we're doing burpees in one of our tracks, she's giving it as much as she can, you know. I mean, but there's four steps to each track, okay? And I go over them four steps. And I'll introduce the high intensity and the low intensity. Some of the stuff when we're on the floor, I can show you. You don't have to get on the floor. You can do a star jump, skip, and, you know, just shake your hips. Do what you can, you know. And half of the class will be on the floor, but half of them are doing their own thing while that little high intensity bit is gone. And everyone is having a blast. Everyone's shouting and, you know, like, hyping everyone up.
And now, a couple of minutes ago, did you say boxing track?
Yeah.
Do you physically box?
Yeah, we'll box. Yeah, like, we'll have, you know, like, kind of, like, but it's like a dance box, you know, a box too.
But there's no physical contact.
No physical contact. No.
And burpees. What's burpees?
It's, you know, when you jump up and then you get on the floor.
That's a burpee.
Yeah, that's a burpee.
Because my niece has just started dancing, and she's fallen in love with dabs.
Oh, dabs.
She dabs,
okay,
all the time.
Yeah.
Apparently, no, I can't do it properly at all. So where are you based, Sue, at the moment?
I'm in St. Etna's Girls' School in Edenmore, Raheny. It's across the road from the Concord Pub. It's in the corner. There's two schools that face the Concord. I'm the one in the corner, the girls' school.
So, wow.
Monday, Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock.
Mm. And so far, so good.
Oh my God, it's amazing. And all the lights do be off, and we put the party lights in. So everyone is just in their zone, you know.
So this is kind of like going to a disco.
This is it. That's what I'm saying. Mm. It's like a night out, you know.
And so, it's a fantastic way for people who mightn't have been out in ages, and they might like to expand their social circle, get to meet new people.
this is it. Like, you wouldn't believe how many people say, oh no, I don't think I'd be able, like, or I'm coming on my own, or I haven't exercised in years, or I've never exercised. And I'm like, just come, I'll have a chat with you and we'll see what your limits are. You don't push yourself, you know, you don't want to injure yourself. You're just here to get out of the house for that hour, escape the bills and the kids and everything else, you know, and just, you know.
Absolutely. So how can people sign up?
Oh, you just arrive and it's €5, pay as you go, and fill out your medical form and that's it then. You know, bring a towel and lots of water.
Shireen, have you tried any of this stuff?
No. Well, it sounds like I should actually try it.
This morning, we'll have another wee chat about conga maybe later on. Because I thought maybe the conga was, you know, the conga? You hold on to somebody in front of somebody and you go walking. It's usually these things that happens at weddings when people have
conga,
a little bit too much to drink and whatever, that kind of stuff, and you get your funny uncle doing stuff with his legs that you don't want to see. But anyway, I'm not the funny uncle, by the way. This morning we're here to talk about a fundraising event for children with autism. Shireen, can you tell us all about it? It's, am I right in saying it's in the Abacus School in Drogheda?
Yes, Abacus School in Drogheda is for children with autism. It has one preschool and has children go start from the age of 3 up to the age of 18. Mm-hmm. It is a fabulous school. It's one-to-one. They have a... They used to be on Fair Street in Drogheda, and it's probably about 2.5-3 years ago they moved to Congress Avenue, and Congress Avenue was an actual school, and then it was adjusted for children with autism. They do an awful lot of social activities with the children. I have a son, Alan, who's 10, and he's in a class, and it's called the Red Class, and he's learning life skills. He's learning how to go out in the community. He's learning how to go to the shop. He's learning how to go to a coffee shop and order himself toast and how to pay for it. Things that he wouldn't get in a normal, stereotypical school. He's in a class of 6 children, and he's thriving. He's absolutely thriving. Yeah, it's something that I suppose, as a parent, I never thought that's what I would want. I always wanted him to mainstream, but as the years have gone on, because he's diagnosed since he's 18 months, that I've realised he's happy, he's content, and he wouldn't actually survive in a class of 30 children. Because children with autism, they don't just have autism. They may have a learning disability, or they might have sensory processing disorder, which means they're affected by sound. So when you're out and about and you see a child that maybe people might say, God, that's a bold child, and they're lying on the floor screaming, they may actually be in meltdown, that the lights may be affecting them. Children with autism would be affected with the lights that might be fluorescent lights. They can actually hear the hum that we can't hear, and this is their sound is sort of expelled by a thousand, like every little sound. And you go into the likes of Argos, you have a radio on, you have signs flapping from the ceiling, you've got people talking, you've got tills ringing. And children with autism find that really difficult if they've sensory processing disorder, because that sound is amplified and they can't actually they can't process it. So that means they literally go into meltdown, and you'll find an awful lot of children will put their hands in their ears and they will scream. And I often say to parents when I'm asked, you know, people often ask me, would you go and approach a parent? And I would say yes, because that parent might be in the middle of Tesco's and they might have a handbag and they might have shopping bags, and they have this child in the middle of the floor with a meltdown. And by just going over and saying, do you need a hand? Can I carry your bags while you pick up this child to move? Those little things make a huge difference. And it's nearly like empathy, you know. Nobody wants their child to be screaming in the middle of a shopping centre, but sometimes children with autism get so overwhelmed by it that they just can't control how they're feeling.
And there is a tendency, I think, with people who don't really understand what's happening here, to just look at this as being a tantrum from a bold kid.
Yes.
And it's absolutely not that.
Oh, absolutely not. Like, it's children with autism, when they go into meltdown, they actually, it's like a volcano erupts, and they actually can't come out of it until it has finished. You know, it's, and if you don't, if children with autism aren't verbal, then they can't communicate it. So they're communicating through maybe screaming, or they may throw things, you might be pulled by the hair, you might actually be pulled to the ground. There are things that actually are to do with a meltdown. It's not, you know, how does a child verbalise if they haven't got speech? Mm. And, you know, there's other communication, which would be PECS, which would be Picture Exchange Programme, how children can speak, which is really, really good. But sometimes you might have that, and children might have an iPad in their hand, or they might have an iPhone, and it's actually, there's a communication programme on it called GRACE, which actually children can show what they actually want.
Yeah.
The GRACE app is a really good communication programme for children with autism.
Sue, do you identify with a lot of that testimony?
Absolutely.
From Shireen?
Yeah, although John, my son John, he's only gone four, so as I was saying, it's only kind of the beginning of our little journey.
Mm.
So, you know, we're just taking it day by day, you know, and yeah, we have had meltdowns. For example, if we go a different route in the car on the road, you know, he gets very anxious and he's thinking, oh, where am I going? Because he's non-verbal, he can't tell me. So it can get very upsetting and frustrating for both of us, you know, because I don't understand,
yeah,
you know, and he doesn't understand why I don't understand. So, you know.
And it's a learning process, not
yeah.
just
oh,
not
absolutely.
Just for your son, but for you as well.
Yeah.
As far as support systems and networks are concerned, Sue and Shireen, how do we compare to other countries, perhaps? If we can compare the facilities that we have here, or lack of, I think I should be right in saying, to those of the UK, maybe the rest of Europe, and the States and Canada, are we lagging that far behind?
Absolutely. We would be based in the Meath area, and from my own personal experience, I'm finding it very, very difficult to get, if you're looking for home help or you're looking for respite, these services aren't available. And every time you go and speak to a liaison nurse or a psychologist, they just, and it's no fault of their own, but they're saying there's absolutely no funding in the Meath area. The respite service in Meath, there is one house with 6 beds for the whole of Meath, which is really a disgrace, because it's not just children with autism, it's children with all disabilities, and you have to hit a criteria of level 1 and level 2 to get to be on the list to get a place. If you're level 3, 4, 5, you don't actually, you're not a high criteria for a respite place. And I don't think, as a parent, down the road, you, for me, respite would be something down the road. I would always have that. I would like eventually to have that in the family. I have an older son who's 12, Andrew, and to be able to bring Andrew to go away overnight, or go to a restaurant, or even go to the cinema, because to be able to do, as Andrew say, normal things is very, very difficult with the child with autism.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you go out, and I'll often say to Andrew, we will go, we will see how we get on, but we may have to leave. And that's what you spend your time doing, because you don't know if it's a different place. That takes a huge lot of social stories. Like, Alan is verbal, and he only is talking probably since he's 5. If you ask him a question, he'll give you an answer. He doesn't have conversational speech, but he's learning that in school. So if I go anywhere, we have a visual schedule. I will do it up well in advance, that he knows where he's going. He'll know what he's going to see. He'll know if he's going to his grandparents' house. If I'm going to Tato Park, for instance, everything will be, there will be a picture for everything that we're going to see. He will also wear ear defenders wherever we go because of noise. He knows now, he's old enough to know, actually, we're going into Tesco's. When I go in this door, the music is going to be really loud. I'll actually put on my ear defenders, so that will actually block out the sound, that it'll stop that meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have a working dog that comes from Irish Guide Dogs in Cork, and her name is Katie, and she would be a great asset when Alan was younger, like for going out and going places new, and she keeps him safe as well.
Can I ask about the diagnostic process? Mm-hmm. How is somebody diagnosed with autism? Are the brain scans involved? Is it a blood test? Do they look back at genealogy within the family?
Do you want me to talk? How did it go for you?
Well, for us, basically, I found out I was pregnant on John's little brother when John just turned one. So it was, as the pregnancy progressed, it wasn't getting easier with John, it was getting harder with John.
Yeah.
He wasn't coming out with any words. He was happy in his home, but when we went to other places, he wasn't. He wasn't playing with toys. He was playing with objects, stuff from the kitchen. He was spinning stuff and he was stimming with his eye, looking out the corner of his eye. So there was a lot of little things. We brought him here, there and everywhere, thought, oh, he just needs to socialise. You know, we weren't in denial, but we weren't aware of autism, you know, that way.
Yeah.
So, and this is the whole issue, you know. So, anyway, so basically, when he was two, we put him down for needs of assessment with the health nurse. So that, as far as I'm aware, that takes 6 months.
6 months. It's meant to take 6 months, but can actually take longer.
Yeah. So while we were waiting on that to happen, we got him privately assessed because we were kind of 100% that he had autism, because we started looking up and researching autism. Yeah. Then we got him privately assessed and he was diagnosed then. So then we didn't do anything with the health nurse. That was all. They discharged him from the service and we basically applied for home tuition with the Department of Education and we got him a place in an early intervention unit then. So
was that difficult?
Yeah, it's very tedious, the forms, and very...
I can only imagine.
I mean, lack of sleep. And, yeah. And then with a 1-year-old as well as John. So it's very, at times I felt, even sometimes I feel like I still two toddlers, you know, sometimes even twins, because John doesn't know sense of direction. He doesn't understand directions, although he's getting better and he's thriving from skill. But some days, if he's having a bad day, I feel I have twins at home, you know, because one toddler's running this way, John's running this way, and you know, and he's no sense of danger, so you know, he would just be gone, you know, so.
But it was in that first year, Sue, that you noticed that something was slightly different.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. After he turned one, I think that's when it started getting harder.
And
I was kind of thinking, oh, this doesn't seem right, you know, with sounds, as Shireen was explaining. He was in his own. You'd have to keep calling him John, 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 and he wouldn't look at you. He was obsessed with spinning things on the floor, and he didn't notice his little brother when he was born. He didn't notice anyone around him, probably only me and his dad, you know. So it's tough going.
Do you relate to that, Shireen?
Yes, an awful lot of it. It's at the time, my mum actually said to me, you know, you need to get Alan's hearing tested, because you would call him, like Sue said, and there'd be nothing. I used to hate going into play centres, because you go into a play centre and you could call him and you wouldn't be able to find him because he couldn't speak, because he couldn't answer you.
Yeah.
Alan used to scream a lot and he used to run around in circles and walk on his tippy toes an awful lot. And like that with toys, he used to... he turned cars upside down and spin the wheels. I remember changing him. He used to get the nappy and used to just keep turning it and turning it and turning it. Line everything up. Everything in the house was straight. I have pictures of tins of veg or fruit or whatever, and they'd be lined up through the kitchen. Definitely didn't like change. We could never go out in the dark in the evening. Used to scream if you're in the car in the evening. And, you know, at the time I look back, you sort of go, you thought like you had him ruined. We have a child, you've ruined this child. God, yeah. You have him spoiled. And, you know, in a way, and I remember, you know, the doctor was saying to me about getting the MMR, and I'd say, no, not until he's walking and talking. Now, at that time, I sort of knew there was something amiss. He looks perfect. You'd never know by looking at him there was an issue. And we went to Sister Lydia in Cabra, and he got his hearing tested, and she said his hearing was fine. And I remember saying to her, do you think he's autistic? And she said to me, I can't say that, but he's not developing for the age that he is. Now, he was probably about 18 months at that stage. And like Sue, we went private. I went through IAA at the time. And to start that process, even through the health board, I went to a paediatrician who was actually in Mount Carmel, because to go through Drogheda would have taken 6 months. And you really get to a stage you just want to know. And the paediatrician in Mount Carmel said to me, you know, he's definitely autistic. And I was sort of thinking, well, maybe he's mild. And he said, no, he's definitely moderate autism. But he started the wheels rolling through the HSE part and the public aspect. And he did the letters for me. And he started that ball rolling while I was going privately at the same time. You know, I think some of the symptoms that people might be aware of are, it's the calling the child's name and there's no, they don't react, lack of eye contact. They might use the parent's hand as a tool for communication, because they haven't got the verbal words. Lack of imagination, play. Also things like spinning maybe wheels in a car, eating inappropriate foods, like eating rubber. We would still eat rubber in the house, you know. Children might eat wood, they might eat string, they might be eating their blankets, towels. Moving furniture in a house can cause children with autism quite a lot of distress.
But can you stick around?
Yes,
because there's a lot to talk about this morning. There's a lot to talk about. This morning we're talking about pardon me, a fundraising event for autism. The old voice always goes on a Monday. It's the hardest day to do radio. Can you tell us when and where it takes place, Sue?
Yeah, so the fundraiser is in St. Etna's Girls' School in Eatonmore, and it's on the 31st of March, 7 o'clock, and we're going to have a live DJ, nibbles, spot prizes, and as much more props as we can get. You know, I'm still on the lookout for a local photographer. So, you know, I just really, really, because it's so close to home for me, I'm trying to make it as special as an event as I can, you know.
Are you from the area, Sue?
I am. I'm from Raheny. Yeah, I'm living in Stamullen, but I was, I'm from Raheny. Yeah.
Wow. So you're local?
Yeah.
We're next door neighbours. <on the block. laughs> If I ever want a bag of sugar.
Yeah.
And Shireen, are you involved with this as well? Yeah.
Yes, well, Sue asked me would I be just to talk about autism, and I'm actually going to really try to get down to the event. Wouldn't do me any harm. A bit of exercise would do me the world of good.
This is it, though. I mean, it doesn't matter if you've never done conga or you haven't done it in ages. Just come along, show your support. The tickets are only €12. You know, I mean, we'll have tickets for the spot prizes. We have some amazing spot prizes already, you know, and we're still collecting over the next week. So, I mean, it's going to be as easy and as cheesy. You know, we're going to have a lot of cheesy pop for the first while, so it'll be a great night.
Well, I remember the 80s, Sue, and cheesy pop is okay by me. It always will be. Just getting back to when you started to notice certain different things, and people talk about things like being normal. I mean, nobody's normal. No. I'm not normal. Ask anybody that knows me. But when things started to become very evident, what was that like for you as a parent? Because I can only imagine that would have been quite scary. Am I right?
Well, for me, yeah, I was. I think I rang Aaron, my husband, probably the last time I brought him to a playgroup, and all the kids are singing nursery rhymes and clapping and jumping, laughing at the teacher. And John is different, and he's over at the radiator and trying to eye up the radiator with his eye or play with the door. And I was blue in the face bringing him here, there and everywhere. So I got into the car, I rang Aaron and just cried and said, there's something not right with John. And he said, yeah, I know. So yeah, so it was heartbreaking, you know, because you see my friends with their kids, you see normal families out at restaurants and being able to sit there and have their foods and be at parties and watch their kids interact with other kids, and that just didn't happen for us. So yeah, and because John was our first child, it was really, really tough, you know.
I can only imagine. Has anybody said anything to you about the causes of why this has happened to you? maybe genetic factors might have been involved, environmental factors. Has anybody given? Is it possible to give somebody a reason as to why this happens?
Well, they say they don't actually know why it happens. They don't have... They're saying that the cause is unknown and there's no cure. I think as a parent, that it has to be one of the harder things. Like, there's no cure. There's lots of help, and there's ABA, and there's, which is applied behaviour analysis, and there's lots of ways of helping children with autism. But the fact that there's absolutely no cure. So for me, Alan is always going to be autistic. It's never, ever going to change. And as he gets older... He's now 10, but I think because he has a mild learning disability with autism, he may be 10, but really age-wise, he's probably only maybe sometimes 6. It depends. And, you know, he's growing, so he's growing as a 10-year-old should, but he doesn't do the stereotypical things that a normal 10-year-old does, like going outside and playing with friends. Now he's as happy, but he likes being in his own surroundings. He likes to be able to do his own thing. Like, he likes Disney Infinity, he likes the Xbox, he loves YouTube, which at the moment he's banned from yet again, because when he watches it, he literally takes it as it is. So if some YouTuber says something, he says it and he repeats it and repeats it. And I think for me that's one of the hardest parts. And I remember when he was diagnosed, in a way it was a relief to, you sort of got the, okay, now we know there's something wrong. Now we can actually say, right, how can we work to make this better? And I think for me, I remember applying to a school which is for children, preschool children. It's called Jonics. And I put his name down saying, definitely want to place in this school, because it was one-to-one and they say early intervention is the best policy. And Alan was only, would have been 2 in the November when he started. And I got a phone call and I was with my older son and we were in TK Maxx and they said, we have a place for your son. I went, that's great. But what you forget is the Department of Education at the time, and I don't know whether it has changed or not, don't start early intervention until a child is 2 and a half. And the lady on the phone said, now, it'll be 10 hours a week and it'll be €250 a week. And I remember standing in the car park going, that's great, we'll take the place. Absolutely no idea how that was going to be paid for 6 months.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea. But he needed the early intervention. I wanted to give him the best possible chance. And we took the place and we did it at the time. Like, it's amazing how you go into auto mode. It's a survival game. It's trying to get the best possible, give your child the best possible chance. You know, early intervention is really, really important. But it doesn't make it go away, and it doesn't change it.
No.
And I think that's the hardest part. Yeah. You know, when you're as a parent, you have a baby in your arms and you look and you think, you're looking at the baby and you're thinking what you're going to name the child and things like that. When you have a child diagnosed with any disability, all that changes, because now you go from your child getting married to mightn't happen, them having children mightn't happen. What happens when they get older? What happens when I get older? Who's going to mind them? They're all things now that would concern me as Alan is getting older. And all those things change. Like for, in autism, it's one in 166 children that have autism. It's one in 100 boys have autism. Autism affects 5 times more boys than girls. And it's a complex lifelong neurological condition. And it is a disability, and it affects the brain, it affects, you know, social interaction, it affects imagination, affects communication. And these are all things that a child with autism can learn how to cope. But, you know, it's a long life disability. I still, as a parent, even though I'm 8 years in autism, if I could, I'm not that parent that say, you know, I wouldn't change it. I would change it. If I could flick a switch, I would change it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I really feel...
Because I'm just thinking now, as I have no children, but I do have a niece that lives next door, and you can see how she's changed and developed. And she's now nearly 7, and she's getting older, and the things she talks about now become more mature, if you like. But she's still a 7-year-old child. But as children develop, their needs change, their likes change, they want different things. Is there enough support there? Is there enough information there that can help you as a parent help them?
Well, one of the reasons why I'm doing the fundraiser is in aid of the Abacus School that our boys go to. I think the support from the parents and the principal and I know Jacinta does an awful lot to help, and I believe, you see, John is only in Abacus since September, but from what I have gathered so far, the support is really there from them, and
I think a network of you learn more from sitting down with another parent, because some parent, you know, you might be going through an issue with toileting and how to deal with the toilet issues, and I think if you sit down with another parent, they might say, well, look, I've tried this, try this, because it can take a very long time to train a child with autism. And, you know, Abacus run an awful lot of different, they run training classes for adults. You learn how to use the iPad if you want to put a Grace application on it, if you want to, for PECs. They also do SIB shops, and SIB shops are sibling workshops for children that have a brother or sister with a child with autism or special needs, and they're run in Abacus and Drogheda once a month. And you don't have to have, you don't have to be a member of the Loud Meath group for you to attend this, and it would be Jacinta Walsh who would be the contact person. And I find from Andrew, who is 12 now, he's probably doing the SIB shops maybe 4 or 5 years, he has benefited hugely, because I think for children that have a sibling with special needs or autism, they can go into a secured a group. They do it through play, they do it through art, and talking to other children, they go, actually, you know what goes on in my house actually is actually not as bad as what goes in Joe Bloggs's house. So, and they learn that it's normal. So whatever's happening in your house, whether there's furniture going up the on the wall, going up in the air, or maybe your sibling is smearing, and that it's okay. And it's very important to be able to express that for children. As adults, we have support groups, we sit and have a cup of coffee. I think women are great at sitting, and they'll sit and chat and they'll cry, and I think that is a great thing for women, because you do need that, because there's days sleep deprived is like, it's torture. I mean, you don't sleep, it's a very
that
difficult part. It is absolute torture. I think in 10 years I maybe have slept maybe in two weeks. Like Alan just doesn't sleep, but it's part of the condition, and you get used to it. It comes part of your life. So if I could give you Jacinta Walsh's email, so for anybody out there that would have a child or that needs somebody to talk to, the SIB workshops, I definitely would recommend. And it's jacintawalsh1@gmail.com, and her contact number is 087 240-7431.
Just the email again.
Yes.
Is it JACINTAWALSH?
One. Yeah.
So there's no E at the end of Walsh?
No.
Great stuff.
And it's all small letters.
Just thinking about kind of your experiences, Sue, and your own, Shireen, and how those experiences have helped you develop as people. Because it's very difficult to plan on exactly how your child is going to turn out. For all the will in the world, you could be the best parent in the world and something might go wrong, something might just not work. But for both of you, and the challenges that you've had to face, as people, do you think you've grown?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you kind of learn what's important and what isn't important, you know. I mean, John is happy. He runs onto the bus going to school.
That's the important thing.
That's it. He's happy, and that's all that matters. And our other little fella is happy, and you know, and the other little fella isn't. I mean, although John doesn't, he's not great at socialising, but Jack's not letting him get away with it. You know, Jack will wrestle him and tickle him, and, you know, and John laughs, you know. So we're getting there, you know, and it's with the help of the groups, the school, Abacus, and, you know, I mean, this time last year, John had no words. John didn't dance, John didn't point, and now he's doing all of them things, you know.
Can I just make an assumption or a presumption that none of this would be possible without the intervention of Abacus? Would that be right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Can I say that?
Absolutely.
The early intervention for if anyone is, you know, maybe getting their child assessed, and I mean, I would highly recommend to put their name down. I mean, if they've reached more milestones by the time the assessment comes around, that's fine, but just try and be proactive, because at this day with the services, it's just huge delays, you know, and by the time they may get assessed, you know, they may be just past the early intervention. I just think the early intervention, the earlier the better, you know.
Yeah. And as far as that process is concerned, are there any tests that a child can go through within kind of days of them being born, which might show up something?
Well, you see, there's only a few checkups with the health nurses. Like, I think there's a 6-week check.
And they're quite basic.
Yep. Well, this
from
is it,
yeah.
And then there's, I think it's a 4-month or 6-month, and then they're left till they're 2 then. I mean, and that's in the time frame.
That is that period when you start to notice things.
Yeah, you know, so I.
So they're not there for the important bit.
This is it. And, you know, I think maybe every couple of months, every child needs to have a little checkup and see if they're reaching their milestones.
Well, surely that's possible. Surely that's possible.
I don't know what's going on. I really don't. You know, even the same, this leads into like trying to raise more awareness. There should be talks in primary and secondary schools with all the kids, letting that, you know, making them kids aware of it's okay if there's another child that's different, you know, lend a helping hand. There should be units in primary schools and secondary schools and all schools. Like at this stage, I don't know where John is going to go for a primary school. I don't know where he's going to be in 2 years' time, you know? So there should be units at every school.
You know, the statistic that you gave me earlier, Sue, 1 in 166, mightn't sound a lot. Do the maths. Mm-hmm. That's thousands.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, for example, okay, so if it's 1 in every 100 boys, if there's a boys' school of, say, 300 students, there could be up to 4 people in that school with autism, and there's no unit, you know? There's only very few schools with units. And I think that should be compulsory. There should be.
Well, there may be 4 with autism, but there may be many more on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
Who will never be diagnosed.
Yeah.
And that in itself, I think, is a is a scandal. Can you remind people, Sue, when and where this event takes place?
Yeah, it's Friday the 31st of March in St. Etna's Girls' School in Eadmore, 7 o'clock.
Well, the boys can go as well.
Oh, the boys can go, of course. The more the merrier. And as I said, it doesn't matter if you've never done conga before, it's going to be just a lot of fun, raising money for the amazing school Abacus, live DJ, spot prizes and nibbles, and yeah, hopefully a lot more.
And having spoken about the funding issues this morning, I know that every cent raised will be vitally important to you. If you had a wish list, what would be at the very top?
For the...
If you could go out and do a bit of shopping, Sue, what would be at the very top of that shopping list as far as, would it be services? The funding of services? Maybe employing extra people to give you a hand with networking and support?
It's a hard one, isn't it?
I would think services and help families. Families are crying out for whether it be home help or to get respite, to get a break, that you can actually... You can actually be go out and be a family. I think just for people to be more aware, and just for services would be a huge part. Like if you could get speech therapy and occupational therapy for your child rather than paying for it privately, and because you pay for it privately, it's approximately 100 euros an hour, which is, you know, it's a lot of money for private. But at the same time, you know, you're wishing for your child to talk, so you really will try anything.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, for the services to be there would be is a huge part of it. But that's down to the HSC and the government, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Absolutely. Listen, thanks, guys, for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much.
I've got to go in a minute. My voice has just come to this morning for some bizarre reason. Shouting too much at the telly.
The rugby.
Can I just say,
of course you can.
On Facebook, if you look up The Jungle Body with Sue, all of the details are on my page.
Fantastic. And again, it takes place on Friday, the 31st of March, St. Etna's in Eadmore. You've got a live DJ, nibbles, spot prizes, the lot.
Yeah.
Listen, Sue, thanks a million for
thank
coming
you so
in
much,
to us this
George.
Morning.
Thank
and
you.
We'll definitely keep in touch. And Shireen as well.
Thank you very
and
much.
Thanks for being so open and honest about your lives now with children with autism. And well, I'll be right in saying it's a blessing.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks a million. Keep in touch and let us know exactly if you have anything else happening as far as fundraising
Brilliant.
Is concerned.
Great. Thank you very
this
much.
That's what we're here for.
Thank you so much.